Take your Bibles while you're standing. Turn to Jude, the book of Jude, just one chapter. It's right before the book of Revelation. Jude, verse 22, and verses 23. We'll read these verses in unison. Jude 22 and 23. And then I'm going to read one other verse to you. And then we'll pray, and I'll jump into the message tonight. Jude verses 22 and 23. Let's read these in unison together. Ready? And of some having compassion, making a difference, and others saved with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. Let me read one other verse to you. You don't need to turn there. Acts 17, verse number 6. When they found them not, they drew Jason and certain brethren unto the rulers of the city, crying, "These that have turned the world upside down are come hither also." And let's pray. Father, Lord, would you take the next 30, 35 minutes, and would you use it to not just change my life and not just change the people's lives in this room, but Lord, for many generations to come, would the influence of a message like this, please, Lord, would you just please help me to have the focus on the Holy Spirit, the words that you would like me to say, so that I could help these your people in Jesus' name. Amen. And you may be seated. One day, the story of your life will be written. It won't be written as to what you want it to say. It'll be written by how you lived. Here's the part that I want you to really think with me for a moment. They're actually writing world history with your life. How will it read? How you live your life will determine what is written about your life. The world will be different because of you. But the question is, how will it be different? You have the ability now to change the rest of your history. Well, I can't change what was. No, but you can change what will be. You see, you will change the world. You may not change the whole world, but you will change your world. All of us live in what we would call our world. I'm not talking about the whole globe. I'm talking about our sphere of influence. So in other words, you may not be known worldwide for your life, but you will be known by your world for your life. What kind of difference will you make in your world? I wrote these thoughts down early one morning. Sin leaves heavy black scribble marks all over the pages of your life's story. Deceit codes words so that the readers are not sure what they're reading. Bitterness blurs the letters to where it's so fuzzy that it frustrates the reader. And selfishness writes it so small that few have the ability to read it. What and how will your story read? God tells us in Jude 22, and of some having compassion, making a difference. You see, God tells us some will live with compassion that makes a difference. And may I say this? Everybody loves somebody. There's nobody other than the old stinking devil that is total hate. No wonder I can't hear myself up here tonight. I didn't turn the monitors on. I'm thinking something's wrong up here. Brother Michael, can you turn these things, just plug them in for me? Don't worry. Watch me, not him. I'm better looking and smarter anyway. Think you can figure it out there, son? He's working on it. You got to push real hard. They have little plastic guards in there for some reason. Wow. Now I can hear. I thought it was just this allergy stuff I have, but I looked down and saw those plugs out and thought, we have troubles in River City here. Okay, wow, I can hear. Sounds a whole lot better. Compassion. And of some, having compassion, making a difference. Compassion is not just a warm, fuzzy feeling. Compassion is not, oh, I feel warm and I feel loving towards somebody. The word compassion is a word that means it's love that compels you to action to do something about it. The word compassion is, we sometimes use part of that word, passion. But it's more than just passion, it's compassion. It means passion that is moved to action. It does something about it. Compassion is a love driven to love until it makes a difference. You know, you can love somebody, but if you don't do anything about it, your love was wasted. The kids got off the bus this morning and walked by me, and I love greeting our bus kids when they get off the church bus, and I love looking at them and saying, it's good to see you this morning. I love you, and I love hearing the little ones. I love you, preacher, and I love you too. Bailey and Kaylee and her cousins got out of the car tonight and ran towards me, and the girls were hugging me, and the boys were shaking my hand. I love you, preacher. Oh, man, I love that. But can I tell you something? If all I ever do is say I love you and never do anything to prove it, what good is that love? It's wasted. As a teenage boy, God had called me to preach. I used to walk to church a lot. While I'd walk, I'd say, God, would you please use me somehow, some way to make a difference someday? That was desire. That was not compassion. That was desire to do something, and I had love built up to want to do something. The last 30 years of my wife and I's life together, living in the ministry, serving God, that's been compassion. The desire to do it was not the compassion. The desire is what drove us to go do something about that desire. And that is what compassion is. You see, God says, and of some, having compassion, making a difference. Let me ask you a question. Will your compassion make a difference in anybody's life? Will it? Little young lady at the college, we brought her home for Christmas. Beatrice, remember, most of you remember B. She's a little black girl from my son's church down in Miami. I don't care what color they are. It doesn't matter. Black people, same as white people. I'm so colorblind, I don't know anyway. But can I tell you something? We were standing there getting ready for Mindy's graduation, and she got her picture with my wife. And I said, B, next year it's you. She said, yes, sir. I said, good. I want to come see you graduate. And she looked up and she said, well, you would come? I said, I am not going to miss that. We can love somebody, but unless we do something about it, what good is that love? Everybody doing okay? I have about four or five statements I'm going to make. Don't get your shoes on yet, though. Number one, those who are poor or not well physically can make a difference in the world, too. Did you know everybody has physical limitations? Nobody is Superman. Well, maybe Alejandro that got baptized this morning. If you weren't in here, he's a 22-year-old special needs young man. And he'd been chomping at the bit to get baptized. He baptized me more than I did him when he got in the day. But when he got done, he was, I loved it. But can I tell you something? Everybody has limitations. Not everybody's going to get straight A's. Thank God. Say, preacher, did you? Mm-mm. We were sitting there in graduation, and they're talking about there are some that you have the honors law day, and then or cum laude, and then you have summa cum laude, and then you have mega cum laude. Brother Hiles used to say it, some come loudly, some come real loud, and some come really loud. That's about what it meant to me. The valedictorian of their class happened to know the young lady, and matter of fact, her daddy was my roommate in Bible college, and Mindy's roommate for 3 years in college. Graduated with a 4.35 GPA. In other words, she got all straight A's and mostly A pluses. I got an A plus in college too, once. But from there we went opposite directions for sure. Wait a minute. Not everybody has the same ability. Some limitations have made people better, and they've allowed those limitations to make them better. You open your songbook and you'll see a name, Fanny Crosby. Fanny Crosby was a girl that when she was about 4 or 5 days old, they put the wrong drops in her eyes and she was blind the rest of her life. The doctor literally blinded a little baby. Accidentally, Fanny Crosby got saved. Fanny Crosby wrote probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 to 500 songs for God. Many, many, many songs. Blessed Assurance, Jesus is Mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchased of God. You know the song? Born of His Spirit, washed in His blood. This is my story, this is my song, by Fanny Crosby. Many of the songs we sing, you'll see the name up on the top of the page, Fanny J. Crosby. Some people have physical limitations. She was blind, could see nothing, but wrote song after song after song after song. I have done a little research, and I said something this morning. I have a heart, a compassion for special needs people, special needs children, autistic, that type of thing, and adults as well. You know, it's a group of people many don't understand. Joe and Ashley aren't here tonight, but Gus is autistic, and I told them 4 or 5 years ago, you just keep coming, God will take care of it. And a little boy that wasn't supposed to ever be able to talk. A little boy that wouldn't look at anybody would walk through church like this. He's going to be my church greeter one of these days. He walked across the sidewalk today and got his shirt and his tie and his suit coat on, pulled real tight because he's like his daddy. And he walked up and moved his hand out to me today. I'll take that. Won't leave the house without his Bible. Sits in junior church and can just about write Brother Joe's outlines out after church is over. They're not unintelligent. They just don't know how to get it all out. And they need reached and they need helped and they need loved. Well, welcome to a church that's going to do it. We need an Alejandro after he gets baptized. Say, oh, that's sacrilegious. No, that's reaching people in the real way. But there was a young lady named Temple Grandin. She was an autistic lady. Her mom did not accept the fact that the doctor said she couldn't do things. Temple Grandin went to school. She went mainline, and it took her a long time to get through, but she got there. And she had autism so badly that and oftentimes they have what they call special blankets for them that weigh real much, and they just try to keep them bound tight, and it helps calm them down. She went to college and lived in the dorms. Before she went there, she went and worked with her at her uncle's ranch, and they had a machine there that they would bring the cattle through, and they would lock the cattle in and give them shots and different things and let them through. You've seen those type of machines. And she noticed that as the cattle would go in there, they'd lock that down and pull the sides in, and it would rub up against that cow that the cattle would calm down. While she was at college, people were making fun of her, and she made what she called a squeeze machine. She virtually made one of those for herself. She began testing it for her class on different people. She almost got thrown out of college for it because they thought it was just something that shouldn't be done, but Temple Grandin has been used because of that. She has changed the beef industry in the world. She would go to places where the cattle would be, and she'd see how nervous they were and how out of control they were. And she would get down and crawl on her hands and knees through the chutes and different things. And she designed a system by which the cattle were humanely and civilly and calmly being able to go to the butcher. She wasn't trying to keep them from being butchered. She just felt like it was unkind to them. And by the way, the hormones, the everything going through those animals is intensified if they're too excited. And therefore, the quality of meat is better if you can keep them calm. The modern day industry for cattle and for cattle butchering was designed by an autistic lady. Now she goes around the country teaching about how to overcome autism, and she's autistic herself. Thomas Edison. Do you know that Thomas Edison only had about 30% of hearing? He could barely hear. And yet had multiple telegraph patents. He designed the phonograph. He designed the telephone. And he was nearly deaf himself. Can I tell you something? Just because you have a physical limitation doesn't mean you can't change the world. There are days I'd like to choke Thomas Edison. You can get angry or bitter and sit there and sulk, or you can use the limitation you have and make a difference in our world. You see, too many of us, I hurt, I can't do this. Well, you can do something in life. Well, I was at Bible college. There was a little old lady. Her name was Ruth Bartels. Ruth Bartels was an invalid. She was a shut-in. Brother Hiles moved her into the actual church building, built a little apartment for her. Ruth Bartels said, "Preacher, I can't even get to most of the church services, but if you'll give me your preaching schedule, if I can't make it to church, I will pray the entire time you are preaching while you're preaching, no matter where you're at in our country or around the world." Didn't matter what time zone they were in, Ruth Bartels would lie in her bed praying for her preacher while he preached all over this country. Encouraged him so much. See, you might have limitations, but there are things that you can do. Number two, you may only know how to work hard, but hard workers can change the world. You don't have to have special talent. God doesn't need talented people. He needs willing people. You know, our world doesn't need talent. It needs character. There's a lot of talented people out there that can't show up to work. There's a lot of talented people that fail in life because they're relying on talent, but they can't show up when they're supposed to show up and handle what they do have. When you get a job, or if you have a job, you need to be the best and the hardest worker where you're at. I believe the hardest working people ought to be the people sitting in this room. Young people, if you get a job, show up on time, be there, work, and work hard. Middle-aged people, go to work and work hard. Show up. Be there. Did you know if you obey the rules at work, whether you agree with them or not, you'll move up? Well, I just don't understand. Nobody paid you to understand. They paid you to do the work. Everybody doing okay? Find something to keep you busy. I guess I was trained the old-fashioned way, but my dad told me if you're at work and there's nothing to do, there's a broom somewhere, push a broom. Find something clean, don't lean. Amen. Everywhere I went, I learned how to stay busy. I didn't make a lot of money, but I stayed busy. Oh, by the way, worked in a machine shop while I was in college and 29 years later, we're building a church building, and the man that I work for called me and has given us $165,000 for this building. Can I tell you why? Somebody showed up to work and worked. I didn't get paid that much. I'll take the interest we got on it for this. It's great. You don't have to be the smartest to be the hardest worker. 1 Corinthians 15:10 says, I labored more abundantly than they all. Can I tell you something? There's something to be said about hard workers. Listen to this very carefully. Henry Ford was not the smartest man in the world, but he was a hard worker. Henry Ford, as a teenager, hated working on the farm. He thought it was ridiculous to follow behind mules and horses to get work done. He figured a machine could do a whole lot more, a whole lot faster than an old horse and a human. His dad didn't enjoy that thought at all, but Henry Ford decided he was going to get into watchmaking. He launched out into it and failed. Then he started working in factories and seeing machinery and decided he had heard about a thing called an automobile over in Europe. Mr. Benz had made the first automobile. He decided that, you know, that would be something neat if everybody who worked could own one of those, how much more work could get done getting to and from work much more quickly. He began to work. He rented a barn, started working in this barn till 2, 3, 4 in the morning and go home and sleep for 2 hours and get up and go to work all day and then go back and work in that barn. Project after project after project after project, vehicle after vehicle after vehicle. You wonder why the Model T came out before the Model A. Well, he had gone through A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S. And when he hit T, he finally had what he wanted. All those others failed. Built the Model T. He figured, that's good enough for me. And for about 20 years, that was the only car you could buy in America. It came in any color you want, as long as it was black. The Dodge brothers invested in the Ford Motor Company. He began, and he didn't invent the car, but he invented the assembly line process to produce them. His goal was to make a vehicle to where the common man could buy it on a salary that was based on a yearly salary. He made it to where his employees could purchase one. But what you don't realize is this. Henry Ford also is the originator of the 40-hour work week. It actually started as a 48-hour work week and then got cut to a 40-hour work week. He's the first person in American history and probably world history to do what we call profit sharing. At the end of the year, the company makes so much profit that he puts it back into the employees. He said, they're the ones that made the money. I don't need any more. They can use a bit more than I can. Put it right back in. And profit sharing started with Henry Ford. You also have to understand, he started a tractor division and proved his dad wrong. He started an aviation division. And World War II was producing planes that were so accurate that the military would send pilots to the end of the assembly line. And as that plane came off the assembly line, the pilots would get in and fly them to the military bases and take them right to battle. On and on it goes. Do you know that the automobile industry actually launched the what we would call the Industrial Revolution in America? Over 100 industries are involved in the automotive industry. There was not any places to purchase them. You had to have gas stations. It built the rubber, the textile, the glass, the gasoline, franchising. I'd go on and on and on and on. Steel industry went crazy. Say, what was it? From a guy that just knew how to work hard. Just knew how to work hard. I could go on and on and on and on. Can I tell you something? Henry Ford made a difference in his world. Made a lot of money too. you know that when Henry Ford died, before he died, he said, there'll be a day when there won't be a Ford sitting at the head of Ford Motor Company. He said, I don't want my children to be corrupted by all this money. And he started what was called the Ford Foundation. It's a worldwide foundation that most of the profits of the Ford motor industry goes back into helping other people. By the way, it's still enacted today. He locked it in to where they cannot change it. When he died, he was worth over $40 billion. Number three, there are those who let anger and bitterness rule their lives, and they make a difference in the world too. Did you know that bitterness is hurt that is never healed? If you have a hurt in your life that you've never allowed to heal, it's still festering, still infected. Somebody gets near it and you flinch. That's exactly what bitterness is. You can heal or get better, or you can let it fester. Too many people with their emotions and with their feelings, they get bitter, they get angry, and they get nasty. Say, what is it? That's someone who's not allowed something to heal in their life. You see, hurt left to fix itself becomes cancerous. It becomes gangrenish. I don't know if you've ever been around somebody that's had gangrene. Oh, is it nasty? I knew a man that was losing a leg, and he had tried for years to keep it. And I was at his house, and he said, Brother Bush, he said, I got to go to the doctor tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to keep my leg very much longer. He said, could you pull the sheet back? I shouldn't ought to have done that. I flipped that sheet back, and his leg was discolored all the way up almost to the knee, and it smelled like Limburger cheese. Foul. Sores were just oozing out of it. And I said, no, doc, I said, you're going to lose your leg. And I said, if you're not careful, you're going to lose your life. I said, you better get there now. He ended up losing both legs due to it, and then his life. Say, why? Too stubborn to listen to anybody? Wouldn't go get it fixed? Just started with a little sore on the end of his toe. But because he wouldn't do anything about it, it got worse and got worse and got worse and got worse and got worse. Did you know that emotional hurt does the same thing? There are people in this room, you've been bitter for years and maybe decades. You won't let anybody help you fix that one thing. Say, what is it, that thing you're thinking about right now? Most people have things in their past, hurts or disappointments, that can stay with you if you allow it to. I am not for the modern psychological trash that we have today. Well, you're this way because your mommy didn't burp you the right way when you were a baby, and dad didn't take you to enough ball games, so you're a pedophile today because of that. No, I don't believe in that mess. You say, well, my parents got divorced. Mine didn't. I'm not talking about mine. But and you let that fester in your life. You think you're cheated because of the situation of your family. Can I tell you something? God can use anybody. Dr. Jack Hiles built the world's largest church, and his dad was the neighborhood drunk who beat his mother and left his sister and he and his mama to fend for themselves during the Depression. If he could do something, how about you? Well, I had a parent. They disappointed me. Well, can I tell you something? I'm sure I've disappointed my kids. I'm sure your parents have disappointed you. And by the way, you'll be a parent someday and you'll disappoint your kids. Nobody said you're perfect. Anybody doing okay? Well, my spouse has hurt me emotionally. Can I tell you something? God can heal anything. I believe that. Let me give you a story here. Adolf Hitler got bitter at the end of World War I. He was a soldier for Germany, and he ended up in prison. While he was in prison, and he had been gassed at the end of World War I with poison gas, and he was angry, he was bitter. He was angry with how that the Allied powers had handled things, how Germany got blamed for so many things. While he was in prison, he put a book together called Mein Kampf. Became the foundation of what we know as Nazism and the communist and the Nazi regime. Oh, by the way, he got so angry because his mother and his mother's influence, and his mother was Jewish. Adolf Hitler was half Jew. People don't know that. And he was so angry and so bitter at his mother that he plunged the world into World War II. $1.321 trillion of damage was done during World War II worldwide. 90 million people were killed or murdered or died during the war as far as a direct result of the war because of the bitterness of one man. He made a difference, not a good one. Number next, those who want to be used by God can be used to make a difference in this world. Please don't take this the wrong way and you're going to think I am totally lost it. But I don't believe everybody ought to be a preacher. Just so you know. If God didn't call you, don't go into it. We've had enough mama called, papa sent preacher boys that went out here and did nothing and get angry and mess up the work of God. If you get in it because God called you to get in and not because somebody made you feel like you should. Everybody doing okay? All right, hang in there. But may I say this, you don't need to be the cream of the crop to do something for God either. God uses common people. Thank God he uses common people. Did you know you don't need to be a preacher to make a difference? Being a Sunday school teacher makes a difference. Being a bus captain makes a difference. Being a assistant pastor, youth director makes a difference. Being just a common person in church who loves on people that comes here makes a difference. I hear every person that visits our church, my neighbor who's Catholic that got saved just a couple months ago, every time he sees me, he says, that's the friendliest church I've ever been to in my life. My wife's aunt and uncle have been here, and it's foreign language to them. He says, that's just friendly. He said, I almost can't take it. It's just too friendly. He said, never been in a church like that. I wouldn't say don't blame me for that, but I didn't. You know, just sometimes that's all it took. Somebody invited them to lunch today. They've never been to church anywhere where somebody invited them to lunch. I didn't tell you to invite them. They were coming to my house for lunch. I would have been glad for you to take them. I could have ate their food. No. You don't have to be the cream of the crop. You don't have to be a blue blood to serve God. As I was at college graduation Friday evening, my heart was thrilled at seeing how God was going to be using a group of graduates to go around the world. Some are going to Africa. There's a young man that came from Africa to the United States, got saved, went to Bible college and got married, and now he's going back to Africa to his home country to be a missionary. I'd go on and on and on and on with story after story like that, but I looked around the room. I looked at this evangelist, and I looked at that pastor, and I looked at that pastor, and I looked at that person on the platform, and that person in the staff and faculty, and that person on the platform, and some of the graduates that I trained their parents, or I had an influence on their parents' lives who are in the ministry. My wife has. And I thought, God, Maybe it did make a little difference. Great big old 6'10" black evangelist walk up and put his big old paw on my shoulder. Brother Bush, he was a teenage boy of mine in Charleston, South Carolina. Can't wait to have Brother Jamie here. You'll enjoy him. He's nuts. I got some pictures. I said, I need to take a picture of you and Mindy. And he bugs his eyeballs out like this. And then I said, come on, get serious. And he's like this over top of her head. I mean, she's, you know, like this. So my wife says, I need to get a picture of you and Jamie. So he's doing the same thing with me. So proud of him. I could go for hours. I got a call this week. Family that I know in a different state, won't tell you where. It's a young couple. They've adopted a couple children. They're struggling a little bit where they're at. He's in the medical profession. I said, well, we got plenty of hospitals up here. Why don't you just move to Martinsburg? He said, Brother Bush, I'm thinking about it. He said, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife about it today. I said, whoa, I was just kidding. He said, I'm not. I said, well, you have your pastor call me. I said, I'll help you with his permission, but I was just teasing. He said, I'm not. He said, Lord's been working on me about this. I'm thinking, good, he can lead songs. He knows how to sing. I don't. Can I tell you something? Let's make a difference in our homes. Within the four walls of our own homes, how about we make a difference there? I'm not just talking about as a parent. I'm talking as a spouse. Let's make a difference in our spouse's life. A positive one, not a negative one. How about you make a difference on your job? You know, some of you want to complain about your boss. How about you make a difference there? Let's make a difference in this area. Can I tell you something? This area is starved for what we have. Everywhere I go. Let's make a difference in our world. In weeks to come, we're going to have a couple folks that are going to come through our area that are trying to get to the mission field, and we're going to start giving towards missions to help some missionaries. We already support 4 or 5, but it's time now that we're in, and we're going to figure out where we are financially, but we're going to start supporting some more folks around the world to get the gospel around the world. By the way, I put them through the paces. I make sure they're our kind of people that are going to be out there seeing people get saved, not just putting food in people's belly and send them to hell with a full belly. Purpose of missions work is to get people saved, not put food in their belly or medicine in their veins. I'm for putting food in the bellies and medicine in the veins, but if they die and go to hell, what good was it? They'll be the right kind of people. While we were in Kentucky, we went to the Noah's Ark museum thing. They have a full-scale replica of the Ark. Now, folks, nobody knows what it looked like, but, boy, you go through that thing, you see how possible it was. There's things about it I would probably disagree about, but the immensity of it is just overwhelming. And the probability of many of the things are there. I know it happened because God said it did. But, boy, when you see that thing, oof, I mean, it's just ginormous. There's lost people that were there. I know one man in particular that he doubted it. When he got through, he was scratching his head. He said, maybe this thing could have worked. I said, oh, yeah. Can I tell you something? Let's make a difference in our world. We may not affect the whole world, but we can affect our world. Your world may be just the four walls of your house. May just be the four walls of this church. But I wonder how many people you could make a difference in. And of some, having compassion, making a difference. Oh, in Acts it talked about those that turned the world upside down. 11 men that turned the world upside down. because they just did what Jesus said. How about we make a difference in somebody's life? Every head bowed, every eye closed, I'm done. Who'd say, preacher, tonight there's something in that sermon that I needed. That was for me. Would you raise your hand? Oh, my soul, many, many, many hands. Maybe you just need to make a difference in somebody's life. If you've been saved and never baptized, we could take care of that tonight. If you've been saved and baptized, like to join our church, we'd love to have you. Hold no punches back. Old-fashioned Baptist church, that's what we are. Maybe you just raised your hand and you need to use the altar tonight.